The holidays are here. It's a joyous time. But what about all those traditional meals we're about to enjoy? Our guest has important insights regarding food and its effect on our health and pocketbook as we celebrate the holiday season.
If the food supply provides twice the calories we need, Thanksgiving provides five times the calories we need. It's a time for getting together, for celebrating. I think it's a week in which you just have to do the best you can.
Marion Nessel holds a PhD in molecular biology. She is a renowned nutritionist who writes about how food choices are shaped by health, marketing, politics, and culture.
Certainly, these things are related and are resulting in food companies responding by producing products that they think will appeal to GLP-1 users. And these are products that are higher in protein, higher in vitamins and minerals, higher in fiber, and lower in sugar.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Well, Dr. Marion Nessel, welcome back to Conversations on Healthcare.
Glad to be here again.
Well, that's great. And, you know, we're posting this interview during Thanksgiving week, and I can't think of the holiday that revolves around food more than Thanksgiving.
Margaret, my favorite.
My stomach's getting just bigger thinking about it. And you explained that America's food system delivers twice the calories we need while wasting, this is just a terrible stat, wasting 40% of what's prepared. Tell us what your advice for having a healthy holiday without waste entails.
Do the best you can with it. If the food supply provides twice the calories we need, Thanksgiving provides five times the calories we need. It's a time for getting together, for celebrating. I think it's a week in which you just have to do the best you can.
Well, that is a very great and pragmatic answer. And I think this year also big doses of Thanksgiving for what we have and compassion for people who are struggling with food scarcity is going to be on the table for everybody around the country.
Yeah.
But Marion, we are excited about the release of your new book. Congratulations. What to Eat Now, The Indispensable Guide to Good Food, How to Find It, and Why It Matters is just published by North Point Press. And it's an updated version of your book that was first published almost 20 years ago. So what new is in the book?
This was going to be a very quick pandemic project where I read the book. I thought, this is a timeless classic. It'll take me 6 months to just kind of polish up the details. 4 years later, we are sitting here looking at the release of this book because so much has changed. And I hadn't been paying close enough attention. I didn't realize it. I mean, there are some things that are just obvious. For one thing, online ordering. It was barely started 20 years ago, and now it's taken over a huge fraction of supermarket sales. And lots of people have had to do lots of things to accommodate to that. Ultra-processed foods, that's a new concept in nutrition and one that's very important for health advising. The replacement of full sugar sodas with bottled waters of a million different types. That's new. Plant-based. There used to be soy milk, and now there's a dozen different kinds. And I think a lot of interesting things like the introduction of international foods throughout the supermarket instead of in special little sections makes a big difference. And then on top of that, all the same old issues that were there are still here, only more so.
You know, Margaret, you go into Whole Foods and half the people in Whole Foods are shopping for somebody else for the online delivery. So dramatic change happening across the wayside. I think anybody who knows Marion knows you are a very positive person looking for the best in every engagement in every person. And when we last talked to you, you had some positive thoughts about the Trump administration's Make America Healthy Again plans. So I'm wondering what the grade is now.
Oh, dear. C minus, maybe D plus. Very, very disappointing that the talk at the beginning, which was so exciting about we're going to end chronic disease in America, we're going to prevent obesity, we're going to make kids healthy, we're going to do all these things, has boiled down to getting companies to voluntarily remove color additives from their food products. Yes, that's terrific. It's gotten the FDA to say that it's going to take a closer look at additives and chemicals in the food supply. That's good. But then it's done some sort of funny things, like we're celebrating that Coca-Cola is now using cane sugar instead of high fructose corn syrup. I can't talk about that one without laughing. I'm sorry, because they're basically identical biochemically. And then there's the weird thing about seed oils. And then you can't talk about what they're doing without talking about how they have destroyed the public health apparatus in this country, destroyed the CDC, made the FDA dysfunctional, and destroyed the research enterprise in NIH. Somehow, getting rid of color additives just doesn't make up for that.
Well, thank you for taking that broad look at it, Marion. And certainly in this first year, we've seen the administration make big cuts to Food and Drug Administration, Agriculture Department, EPA, in addition to some of the others that you mentioned. I guess if you had an audience of 30 minutes with some of the leaders in the administration, what would you prioritize in terms of restoring funding for that you think has potentially made the biggest negative impact by removing it or needed the most investment to move us
forward? Well, if you're going to make America healthy again, and I'm, of course, interested in the food aspects of that, you want to make healthy food cheaper and more available for everybody. And you want to stop the marketing of that, of junk food, ultra-processed junk food, especially children. You want healthier food in schools. You want universal school meals. You want school meals funded better so that the food can be better. You want universal health care. You want, you know, a lot of other things that support that. Maybe warning labels on ultra-processed foods. I mean, kinds of things like that. And there was talk about those kinds of things at the beginning, but they seem to have backed off on all that. Mm-hmm. So I think there's plenty we could do, and there's plenty that a government could do to make it easier and less expensive for people to eat healthfully. But I don't see any signs of that being done.
No proposals on the table, no legislation in the big, beautiful.
If there is, I'm not hearing about it. You know, the two Maher reports that have been published, the first one was aspirational and had an enormous agenda of kinds of things that they wanted to work on. The second one cut back on all of that, didn't mention the word regulation. We're not going to regulate. We're going to ask companies to do these things voluntarily. Good luck with that. Okay, it's working with color additives, but color additives are easy in comparison to some of the other things. Regulation, no, we're not going to regulate. We're not going to do anything about ultra-processed foods. We're just going to try to define them. We're not going to say anything about marketing to children. We're going to investigate. We're going to look into. We're going to study. We're going to research. We're going to think about. We're going to consider. Hard to know what they're going to do. I want to know what they're going to do. And we don't have the dietary guidelines yet. The dietary guidelines will tell us a great deal about this administration's agenda. They're expected by the end of December. By law, they're supposed to be out by then. They were promised for September, then October. My suspicion is that they've discovered that they're not quite as simple to deal with as they thought they were, and that the promises that this would be a five-page document may have turned in simple language promoting consumption of relatively unprocessed foods is turning out to be a little bit more complicated than they thought. But I don't really know. Everything is speculation at this point.
You know, Margaret, New York City had a big election. A lot of conversations about bodegas and these small restaurants and the conditions that people are in. And Marion, you really make the case for paid sick leave for anyone who works in a bodega, a grocery store, or a restaurant who handles food. And of course, these sectors oppose such mandates. I'm wondering if you could just explain to our listeners why you're so strongly supportive of paid sick leave for these workers.
Well, because if people are working when they're sick because they can't afford not to, they're going to contaminate the food that they're working with, and you're likely to pick it up from them. Contagious diseases are contagious. That's what they talk about. And they're transmitted by hand-to-mouth contamination. They're transmitted by breathing. And you want sick people to stay home and take care of themselves, not least so they won't make other people sick.
Well, Marian, this is probably well known to most people at this point, that food companies are paying our grocery stores for the placement on the shelves and paying a premium for the best placement. So you explain how branding works in your book and how the industry uses loyalty data to influence consumer choices. You wonder sometimes what decisions are we making on our own. But what tips can you give us for overcoming the influence that the companies really wield over what placement we have or what we see when we go into the grocery store?
Well, if I wrote this book for one reason, it was to get people thinking about how difficult it is to make healthy food decisions in the face of a food system that is absolutely set up to sell you too much of the wrong kind of food all the time because it's more profitable to do so. So you have to understand right from the beginning that you're fighting an entire food system on your own. That's a lot to ask of an individual. They're bigger than you are, and with a lot more firepower to try to get you to buy what they want. And when you sign up for one of these plans with a grocery store and you're giving them all this personal information about who you are and where you live and how many children you have and whether you drive a car or not and all of these kinds of things that they're asking, their AI algorithms go to work to sell you the products that are going to be the most profitable, that they think you're going to buy, that you're most likely to buy. They're really good at that. And so to resist that kind of thing, you have to not use those services, make your own food choices, grow your own food if you can. But I think it's very difficult. I think anybody who wants to eat healthfully in today's food environment has a big job to do. I have a lot of sympathy and wrote What to Eat Now to try to empower people to make those kinds of decisions or at least understand why.
Right.
Sure. They leave a supermarket with a shopping basket full of impulse buys. We're human.
Yeah.
And they know how to get us to do that.
You know, I'm thinking to an earlier question about what's changed. You were reflecting on what is different from 20 years ago, and certainly, Margaret, social influencers who aren't the big media company, but they are using the social influencers. So it looks like your neighbor's giving you this advice. So that's been a dramatic change that's happened over the 20-year period about how we're receiving that information in it. And I won't say it's deceptive advertisement, but it's certainly it's engaging. A different way of impacting. And probably another thing that wasn't something you were talking about 20 years ago was the GLP-1s and how they've cut into grocery store sales. And I was looking at some interesting statistics. In this calendar year, from January to March, there were 1 billion fewer restaurant meals. Again, sort of getting back than there were a year before, 1 billion fewer. And so more people are eating at home, and that's kind of interesting of how that's going on. But I really want to focus in on the GLP and their influence, the industry's really trying to also respond with GLP-1 friendly foods and more items focused in on protein. I'm wondering if these are hopeful trends.
Well,
I'm not sure what a GLP-1 friendly food is.
Well, I can tell you what they are.
Okay.
I mean, I'm completely fascinated by these drugs because they not only help people lose weight, but it's the way they help people lose weight that is, I mean, what they do is they stop the food noise. People who are taking the drugs tell me that they just don't hear the food noise anymore. What is food noise? That was a new concept to
right,
me.
Right, right. But we immediately have a sense of what it is.
But I love the term. I just absolutely love it. And it's, you've got food in the house. If it's in the house, you have to eat it. It's that simple. And it's being obsessed with food. It's thinking about it all the time. It's thinking about the next meal when you're in the middle of the previous one. It's just being obsessed with food, and that stops with these drugs. That's fascinating. That is absolutely fascinating. And the result of it is not that people don't want to eat. They still want to eat. They still like the foods they liked. They just don't want to eat as much of them. And that in itself is completely fascinating. And what's happened as a result is that sales of food by purchases of food by people who are taking GLP-1 drugs are down by somewhere between 5% and 10%. Supermarkets are seeing this. They are absolutely seeing it. Restaurants are seeing it. It's very hard to sort out how much of the decline is due to the GLP-1 drugs and how much is to do with the shocking increase in prices of food. Another thing that I noticed in writing this book is food prices have doubled since in the last 20 years. Doubled. That's a lot. In the last 20 years, I live in New York City where prices are ridiculous, but I certainly notice the difference in going to a grocery store that what used to cost $10 is $20. What used to cost $20 is $40. What used to cost $100 is $200. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard to sort out what is going on there, but certainly these things are related and are resulting in food companies responding by producing products that they think will appeal to GLP-1 users. And these are products that are higher in protein, higher in vitamins and minerals, higher in fiber, and lower in sugar. Mm-hmm. That takes care of it.
Yeah, Mary, can I just ask you a follow-up question on that, though? Again, this moment in time that we're living in where the economics are so difficult for people, including the potential for further reduction in food stamps, as we've been preparing for recently. So the challenge is the more expensive the food, the more people are drawn towards the poor choices, which have higher volume, maybe higher satiety, more of the empty calories, the bad foods, right? What's your advice to the person who has the very limited income in terms of the focus in the grocery store? What's the maximum value for people to get nutrition for their family and stay at the lowest end of the scale they can? Is it possible?
Beans and rice, brown rice. Beans are the, If there's anything that's a superfood, it's a bean, because they're quite high in protein and they have a lot of vitamins and minerals as well. You have to be able to cook if you're going to eat, or you can buy them canned, I suppose. But if you want to save money on food, you got to cook. And of course, that means you have to have equipment, you have to have knowledge, you have to have a refrigerator is useful, yeah. A stove is useful, pots are useful, and you have to have the time to do it. If you're really good and you know how to cook, you can put a meal together very quickly, using real foods and throwing them together in various ways. I mean, one of the things about diets that is really interesting but makes them complicated is there are thousands of ways of putting foods together in combinations that taste good and are healthy. I mean, there are whole civilizations that are based on healthy foods cooked in delicious ways, you know, classic Chinese cooking, classic Japanese, classic Mediterranean, classic whatever. I mean, these were all very, very healthy diets, all which have in common that they were based largely, but not exclusively, on plants. And required cooking and seasoning in various ways. The fats differ, the amount of fat and carbohydrates differ enormously, but they were all healthy. So that tells you that there are lots and lots of ways that you can eat that are good for you, and you ought to be able to find ones you like among those possibilities.
You know, I want to go back. You were talking about food noise, and I'm wondering if there's sort of an addiction element here. We had, Marianne, the head of the National Institute of Drug Abuse online, who was really talking about, can GLP drugs be sort of tested around addiction, right? Mm-hmm. It's because it seems to be what right. We're hearing anecdotally is it's stopping craving for alcohol, it's stopping craving mm-hmm. for cigarettes, stopping craving maybe for food. Yeah. I'm not sure, but was certainly talking about this is an area that really should need some robust research.
Well, there's plenty of it. And there certainly are people who believe that GLP-1 stop food addiction. Food is different. You have to eat to live. You don't need alcohol. You don't need cigarettes. But you don't need fentanyl or opioid drugs. But you do need food. You can't live without it. So it puts food in a somewhat different category. But certainly there are people who report relationships with food that sound very, very much like addiction. They think about it all the time, food noise. They think about it all the time. They hear the food noise all the time. They're uncomfortable if they're not eating. They want to eat all the time. It's for people like this, these drugs are a great blessing. And I've talked to lots and lots of people who are taking these drugs about whether they can handle the side effects, and the ones who are still on the drugs can. The cost of the drugs is prohibitive for many, many people, but I think that cost will go down and the injections will get translated into pills. They'll figure out a lot of these things with time. We still don't know what the long-term effects are because they haven't been around that long, but we'll find out. There's lots of research going on.
Absolutely. Well, Marianne, you've posted information on your blog about California Governor Gavin Newsom signing a bill that restricts ultra-processed foods in school meals. Tell us about the law. I'm not sure what its status is right now, but are there deadlines for it to happen? And do you see this as a hopeful way to get to the next generation as they're coming up and get them starting with good food choices?
Well, I'm laughing at the question because it doesn't get implemented for 10 years.
Is that right?
By that time, there will be many generations of schoolchildren who will go through. I don't really know how it's going to work. I'm sure it will be challenged in court. I have no doubt because everything is challenged in court these days, and that will be too. I think the idea of it is good. What it doesn't say is what schools will use as alternatives, because if you want schools to be giving real food to kids, that food has to be cooked or prepared in some way. Not all schools can do that. Not all schools have kitchens. I've been to a lot of school meal programs, and I'm very impressed by how individual they are. But even though they all follow the same Department of Agriculture rules about what they can serve the kids and the nutritional value of the foods, how that gets implemented is so dependent on who's in the school and whether the school has facilities and how well the school food service staff knows the names of the kids and cares about it and what the principal is like. I mean, they're very, very different. And there are two issues related to school food. One is whether the food is edible. And the other is whether the kids are going to eat it. And I've seen schools with all four combinations. Schools that was schools where the food was pretty awful and the kids weren't eating it. Schools where the food was pretty awful, but the kids were eating it. Schools where the food was restaurant quality and the kids weren't touching it. Schools where the food was restaurant quality and the kids were adoring it. All four combinations. Depending completely on who the people were who were there and what they cared about. So
that's great.
Very interesting.
You know, you write in to keep it simple in beverages and that water, which we agree, should be the default. Wondering if you could share a bit more about your advice on so-called health drinks. And what about mocktails, which I think is a favorite, which are gaining in popularity?
Well, first of all, I'm in favor of tap water. Most cities in the United States, not all, but most cities in the United States have very well-treated tap water. Where I actually visited a treatment plant in upstate New York and was
New York City has great water, yeah.
New York City has great water. I visited the treatment plant in Ithaca, New York, a small town upstate. But I was so impressed with the dedication of the people who worked there and how hard they were working to make sure that that water was of outstanding quality and safety.
My father was a water chemist, so I absolutely
you know about this and really worried about too much sodium in the in the winter because of all the salt that got put on the roads, and too much magnesium in the summer because of what leached in from glacial leaching, and making sure there were no PFAS, you know, these forever chemicals in the water, really doing an outstanding job. And the problem is that the bottled water industry has worked very hard to convince people that bottled water is better than tap water. It isn't necessarily. And it actually, most bottled water comes from tap water.
That's right.
And I worry that if people drink tap water, that drink bottled water all the time, that they're not going to politically support their water treatment plants to the extent that they should. And I'm just astounded. One of the huge changes in supermarkets in the last 20 years, as I said, is the substitution of water of one kind of another for sugar-sweetened beverages. That's a plus.
Yep.
For health, but a lot of it is, it's still sweetened, it's flavored, it's
and we still have to get rid of the plastic bottle that it.
And we still have to get rid of the plastic bottles.
That's a problem.
Huge problem. Too much plastic in our environment.
Totally agree, Marion. You're known not only for being a nutritionist, but I think you're a self-described foodie, if that is correct. So of course, we do have to ask you. What will be on your Thanksgiving table this year? Is pumpkin pie going to be on? And what would you say constitutes a great Thanksgiving dinner for you and your family?
Well, I'm going to have to confess that I'm skipping Thanksgiving this year. I'm going to Brazil on a speaking tour. I'm going to three cities in Brazil over Thanksgiving week. So I'm going to miss it this year. But other than that, I'm Thanksgiving traditionalist. I like a really good turkey, preferably from a local producer, squash from my garden, the usual.
Wonderful. Well, we wish you the very best on Thanksgiving. Fruit pies. There you go. A little indulgence.
But no Thanksgiving this year for me. Sorry.
Thank you, Marion, for joining us. And thank you to our audience for being here. Just a reminder, be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube, find us on Facebook and X, and please share your thoughts and your comments about this program. Take care, be well. This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.